Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ray. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Today, we have a special interview that we're going to be discussing some various geopolitical conflicts, and we're going to be doing it introducing a different perspective, one of the Eastern Orthodox tradition, to talk about Russia, Ukraine, and Israel, Gaza, these, and possibly some other geopolitical conflicts as well. And it's I have a special guest, Christine Lin of American Orthodox Christian, and this is a blog that she runs, and she's going to be giving us a her perspective on these geopolitical events, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about Eastern Orthodoxy, and we're gonna have fun discussing that, I guess. And we're gonna talk about something regarding geopolitical events that are happening recently. And one thing that I've covered extensively is how Big Eva, the big evangelical industrial complex, largely helmed in this case by men like Brent Leatherwood, Daniel Darling, Richard Land, have been pushing the United States to fund and support the Ukrainian regime. And we have a perspective from an Eastern Orthodox that's going to talk about the spiritual implications of this policy. And we're also going to talk a little bit more about the Israel-Gaza conflict as well. And I want to introduce Christine Lin. Welcome to the program. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Pleasure to be with you.
So I'm just going to stereotype a little bit, but your name indicates that you were not born into the Eastern Orthodox tradition. Is that a correct assumption?
That is correct. The majority of my life, I was an inquirer. And interestingly enough, in my search for what would be the true faith, my worship of Jesus Christ to evince God's will in my life and develop holiness, as we are all called to do. I never found a church that really matched, that resonated with me spiritually. I was Roman Catholic, and that was because, in my entire life, it was the only church in the United States that I did feel a sense of holiness and tradition. And yet, simultaneously with being a member of the Catholic Church, I rejected much of what I felt was the man-made, whether that's the papal infallibility, the Immaculate Conception. There were various disagreements that I definitely had, most in regards to the Pope, all of that. But still, I certainly wasn't about to attend Protestant churches, which to me, for the most part, seem like you're just entering. They've got something to sell you, and it's in the sin, and we've got the answer. And it had no sense of holiness or worship of God, which is why I go to church. Only in Roman Catholicism did I find that. And however, it was in, I'd say 2020 and 2021 that I really became aware of the Eastern Orthodox in my life. Although I've traveled across the country in terms of where I've lived for any given amount of time, there had never been an Eastern Orthodox church, so I had not been exposed to it in my adult life. And as, in my studies of Russia, of course, Eastern Orthodoxy became paramount. And I was very with the president of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin's faith as events. For a number of years, city of Russia, and the government itself, how it operates. And of course, I was approaching that in my study and research of Russia geopolitically, but in it, I was just impressed with the people, the society, and how that faith was evinced by all, including from the government. So I then became an inquirer, reached out, Orthodox Church, and I am ROKOR, which is the Russian church outside the Russian Orthodox of Russia. I was chrismated into that church, it's beautiful. And I was chrismated, entered into the church. I found the Divine Liturgy to be everything that I was looking for. It was the true faith. And really, when you think about it, historically, the Catholics left us, the Orthodox Church, in 1054. They are the ones who separated the apostolic church that Christ began on. And it's very interesting for those who haven't visited our church. All of our traditions date back. We are worshiping in the same way that the apostles did. We don't add to it. We do look to the Bible, as well as the teachings of the saints and the holy fathers. I found my home that I wore my entire life. And I must say that really, to me, communicates the truth that we focus upon Jesus Christ our entire lives, and we seek holiness at all times. And very joyful that I finally found the true church, and it is the original. As I said, when the Catholics left us in 1054, all of the Protestant denominations, they then left the Catholic Church, and every one of those was another degree of separation from the church.
Now, obviously, I have some disagreements, but I do think you'll find me surprisingly well-informed on the Russian Orthodox Church. I'll get to that in a minute, but it sounds like, you know, you value what's called like high church, and a lot of, you know, evangelicalism, you know, is kind of falls into low church. You know, when you talked about the department store, that would be like low church, whereas high church would be more like liturgical. So it makes me wonder whether you tried something like Anglicanism or Lutheranism. I guess is like my first question.
I mean, I have had close friends that I've known those churches, but it wasn't a matter of trying. I must say, once I began to study Orthodoxy, it was perfect. And once I learned it is the church, away from it, why would I want to get further and further away from the original church? And no, it really wasn't a matter of instant recognition. This is my home.
Okay. You know, as far as apostolic succession goes, you know, I don't believe it's necessarily a linear succession, which I do believe is kind of like the argument between Catholics and Eastern Orthodox and maybe the other, you know, more Eastern religions, you know, Oriental Orthodox and stuff like that. Whereas I don't necessarily view it as a singular succession, whereas, you know, the branches necessarily come from the same tree. They still have a succession that they can trace back to. I would say that, you know, Protestantism is much closer than, you know, modern day Catholicism to what the original church was intended to be. And, you know, that's why, at the end of the day, a lot of this has to do with authority. Now, you made some comments about Putin. I've never really considered Putin to really be a man of faith. To be honest, I just think he's a little too universalist to really be considered a Christian. So, and you know, he values Islam, for instance, and stuff like that. So he's very friendly towards, non-Christian religions. So how do you see Vladimir Putin as what some Protestants might call a Christian prince? How do you see him as that?
Oh, actually, I think that Putin is a fine witness for faith. And in view of what you have just said, he, of course, is the president. This is a federation. It's a constitutional country. So it's run by the Constitution, just like over here where we have the divisions of government and the judicial and the legislative and the Duma. And as such, officially, it's a secular state and it's a constitutionally law-based government. But in that, what the beauty of it is, and I will speak about Putin's, but I would like to let your audience know that in Russia, the beauty of it and what you are alluding to in terms of being friendly with the Muslims or the Hindus, it's not a matter of, say it's this. He is the president of the Federation, and as such, they actually have a council. And unlike in the United States, that to me, just a depraved, a very evil government in what it does worldwide later. Instead, I have been deeply impressed with how Russia has restraint values, and it does, human life, unlike the propaganda that Americans are bombarded with. And part of that is because Putin and the entire government incorporate the fundamental religions of the Russian Federation. This is the largest country in the world. So we have Muslims, we have Jews, Christians, Orthodox Christians, all together, and their representatives regularly meet with the president of Russia in order to input on controversies, on laws, and thus there is that I would also say it is a very good thing that as the president, he's not simply choosing his own faith, that is how he lives personally, but he listens to our Patriarch Kirill, but he does listen to the Jews. Some of the Jews in the world have very much complimented how Russia relates to the Jews in their state, and the same with the Muslims. We don't have the sad demonstrations and mistreatments because they do not allow disrespect of any of these religions. For example, you don't burn a Quran in Russia. And so they're not ruling by a religion from the government, but they have a respect for all of the primary religions in the country. And I think that that is what you may be referring to. But as a man, the man is most certainly in my research, and I have done deep research on his life and spoken to people, listened to people. And I would say that unlike, and I have to make the comparison, though that's all I'll do very quickly, unlike those in the United States who are politicians, who wrap themselves around their Christianity usually, and I just see it as photo ops. And, you know, the Bible tells us by their fruits you shall know them. And the fruits of Vladimir Putin are good and righteous. And in terms of his faith, yes, it was, of course, as with all of us, an evolving. You're born into, a country. He was actually baptized secretly because at the time in the Soviet Union, that would have been dangerous. His mother actually kept his baptism private, even from his father, who was a communist. And she did, though, instruct him in orthodoxy, age and university and career. But it was later that the things that his mother had told him and the cross that she had given to him, his baptismal cross, there's a, I would say, kind of a miracle around that cross, as shared by Putin in one of his books. it became very important to him because he had some traumatic events, personal in his family, in which he's seeking God, and it became very important to him. I would say that from what I, who I've spoken with, it's not just for the public. It is actually a very private. He has his own child, both at his office and his home. And I know that he has traveled on pilgrimage to Russia privately. These are not occasionally. And if you visit my website, American.com, I have a piece about Putin because I get that question frequently, Ray. And his faith actually visiting the monastery is outstanding because much of his pilgrimages that are done, and as Orthodox, when we do that, is private and it's for our own spiritual edification. And that has been a part of his life. And what is publicly known is who can share about that, even on his vacation, which are kept private, the even very small village Orthodox churches in order. Again, these aren't photo ops because it's not out there. You can talk to the people in the village and share because his faith, I believe, is sincere. I feel him to be. And I would say in every way that he rules as president, those values are evinced.
So let me kind of, man, there's two directions I want to go in. So let's go in the first direction that I want to talk about, and is that you know, Putin in his interview with Tucker Carlson, he described, you know, he's not the most spiritual person. You strike me as someone that's very spiritual in a sense. So there, I see mm-hmm. a little bit of a disconnect in there, but obviously there's a common thread of Russian Orthodoxy. And how would you explain the rather low religiosity that you see in Eastern European nations, specifically after the fall of the Soviet Union?
Well, actually, I would say it's just the opposite. And don't let me forget your second question about Eastern Europe. But first, in regards to what and I have watched many hours over many years of Putin. I watched the Duma. I watched the discussions, study. I have found that when he is there as the president of the Federation of Russia and he's discussing things, I feel that in that interview, such as it was, dealing with the audience and the purpose to be able to share. He did not want, as the president, to get into his faith. Because I can tell you just as much as what you saw past that at the time, because he knows, at least this is what I suspect, what I speculate, he knows where that would go into the conversation. And he really wanted to redirect it to what the purpose is, which was hopefully educating some of the ignorant Americans of the truth of the Ukraine conflict. And I don't think he wanted to.
If I may interject on that, you are definitely right that he wanted to control the conversation. And that's exactly what he did to Tucker Carlson's surprise there.
Well, I think Tucker Carlson came to it quite unprepared, frankly. I was appalled at his ignorance, as he clearly stated. He had not even listened or read Putin's, you know, when he announced it, February 22nd, the 24th, the reasons for it. He said he had not even listened to that the day of the interview. And I just found it several remarks in regards to China, in regards to the seeking of peace, while as Russia has repeatedly seeking a peace and an end to this, in fact, did everything that they could to prevent it. And it, of course, was who went back on Minsk 1, Minsk 2, and have admitted, all of those leaders have admitted that they were lying at the time to Russia in order to arm Ukraine. So I actually felt that he came to it because of several of his unprepared, or at least of what I would feel would be basic knowledge you would have before you were going to interview the president. You had a second question there, Ray, about you see in terms of in reference to the Orthodox Church in Eastern Europe. Well, I can speak to, first of all, with that. Now, in some countries, I would agree, but I focus upon Russia. Let's take a look at, expanding via the Orthodox Church is extremely strong. In fact, the Orthodox Church is the second largest church next to the Catholics worldwide. And it's in, in the Russian Orthodox Church is in about 30 different countries. And in Russia, under President Putin, actually, we have had the churches that were destroyed, after the Bolshevik Revolution, when the communists, destroyed so many of the churches and murdered believers. The tragedy that the Soviet people suffered through. He points the number of Russian Orthodox being built nationwide is incredible. Hundreds and hundreds of them are being restored. And some would say the faith was kept alive, often having to be done privately and secretly and moderate public. But once, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was a complete revival and people could come back to their faith. And I frankly believe that when Putin 99 priority, and I've been very deeply impressed, and I can tell you the Russian people are grateful.
Now, it sounds like you're saying that, part of the reasons why, religiosity might be statistically lower is because, churches are being rebuilt after, 70 years or so, give or take, of, Bolshevism pretty much kneecapped Russian history. And you strike me as someone who doesn't really rely on the communist period historians on your study of Russian history. Is that a correct assumption?
No, I would say both are true. Been doing after really knowing of Russia, post Soviet Union, I have been intensely studying the Soviet era. But I actually am not saying
I was talking about the sources of the sources of information and experts that you trust, wouldn't be coming from the Soviet perspective.
Most certainly I have. I frankly, I tell you, as a historian and as a Christian, truth is my highest priority. So I take in all sources and I evaluate. And before I share any, people visit my website and can read these essays. What I share is I confirm the sources. I do not just repeat things that I have heard. Make sure that I've confirmed sources that then get a sense of trust for me. But no, I wasn't actually referring to a lack of worship. Russia, of so many people, millions of people, of all different faiths, and some take that more seriously. Some are going to be attending church, regularly, daily, even, and be observing the fast and feast, which I do, as in being in Roe Corps here in the States. And then there are going to be those who do not. They may only attend their church, at Pascha, which is very important to us, what Americans call Easter, which is coming up. On May 5th, and we have a different calendar that we use. No, I would say that it has become imbued in the society. And whether people attend a church or not, regularly or just sporadically, it's a part of the people, right? It's the values of Christian or part of the people, it's reflected in society. This is why they reject all the things that the United States is praising. You are not going to see sexual perversity paraded in the streets because it's not tolerated. It's not allowed. You're not going to see persons being able to relate to young people who want to share such things. We are also, what I'm studying is they are opposing mutilation of children. you name it, so much of what the United States has accepted, and I mean at the governmental level, which comes from the people, all of the perversities, all of the degradation of American society, and it really does start from the people, and the government merely reflects the people. And I would say the same thing is in the Russian Federation, electing the people. And those values are things that they do not want, for example, gay parade, it is not allowed. Homosexuality, that's a private matter, but you keep it private. It is not something that the government, unlike the U.S. government, they are completely opposed to those things. And frankly, all of my Christian values reflected in the laws of Russia. I don't see hardly any of my Christian values reflected in the government of the United States.
Yeah, I think we definitely have some agreement on that. I do see Russia as having a more, you know, and again, I want Putin to be the Christian prince of Russia. That's, you know, just to use, you know, more Protestant terms. I want him to be that. It's just a question of, do I believe that he is or not? So with that said, I want to go back into the other path that I wanted to go down, which was kind of the orthodoxy path. Because you mentioned the schism. I kind of peg the schism as really being 1204. Like anything before 1204 was kind of repairable. But, you know, when you sack Constantinople and the disavowed crusade, you know, Fourth Crusade, there's not going to be much recovery from that. And then from there, you know, sort of the argument that I hear, that I understand that Russian Orthodoxy believes is that, you know, that Russia is the third Rome, essentially. And I don't know if you're familiar with that argument.
Yes, I am.
So maybe I'll put it into layman's terms and then you can correct me. So basically, Rome kind of fell, then Constantinople became the seat of Christianity by this argument. Before Constantinople fell, you know, the Greek Orthodox kind of basically bent the knee to the papacy in like the Council of Florence, I believe. So 1429-ish. And then 1453, I believe, is when Constantinople fell. And then the Russian Orthodoxy didn't go along with the Council of Florence, as I recall. In my understanding, they didn't go along with that. And they believed, you know, since Constantinople fell to the Muslims, that Moscow is the seat or the protectorate of Christianity, and that's they're the new Rome, so to speak.
I think that's a good summary. I would make two comments. First of all, the Russian church now is separating, and we are no longer in communion with the Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew. That happened in 2018, and that, along with a lot of other reasons, as far as I'm concerned, I do not look at Bartholomew as a spiritual leader at all. To myself as an Orthodox Christian, there's too much there, and I must say that Orthodoxy and their time, Ray, is being subverted, and the United States has a lot to do with that, and its government. But to what you are discussing, yes, I would touch and frankly view the Russian people as God's chosen people. And I would say that there is no country on earth that evinces God's will and Christian values in Russia. And so I've read all that. I've read much of the Russian literature in terms of in prophecy and the saints who have in Russia about where Russia stands. And I see much prophecy in Russian Orthodoxy being fulfilled. And I do believe that they are God's chosen people. And frankly, that is why when I look at a country like the United States, France, all the vassals of the United States who are supporting the evil regime such as the Ukraine. It makes me think of in the Bible when it says that God God will, I will bless the curse those who curse you. And I believe that the United States and all of the NATO countries that go along with its evil against Russia are going to be cursed. And I think that they are going to suffer badly.
Now, I wouldn't agree with that because, you know, I think the church, you know, universal church, I don't want to say Catholic because, you know, people get the wrong impression.
Right.
But universal church, I believe, is God's chosen people. And from my understanding of your writing, you don't mean that to mean that Russia's exclusively chosen, but just that they're the biggest embodiment.
Yes. Not exclusivity. My belief is that when we refer to God's chosen people, those are the true Christians of the world, wherever we might be. They make up what is the Israel of the Bible to the believers in Christ, the actual believers. Not everybody who says, Lord, Lord, is a believer, but those who actually are seeking to have the Holy Spirit work through them and believe in Jesus Christ. That, to me, is the Israel that the Bible, and in terms of people, I am saying as a, yes, I feel that to be Russia.
Okay. And, you know, because, you know, people are going to put that in the comment section. So I thought I'd push back a little bit because I have read, I did read that article before, you know, we did this interview. Now, right. One thing I wanted to comment on, and maybe, you know, you can, maybe this is explained by the difference between Russian Orthodox and Greek and et al. Orthodoxes, is that, you know, in America, we kind of see that white evangelicals are the lone bulwark against moral insanity, as Stephen Wolf famously said a year ago. And with regards to that, the statistics that I'm able to see on this are that Eastern Orthodox and Catholics kind of have the same voting patterns in the United States. Why do you think that that is?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Well, and by voting patterns, it's like 50% Democrat. You know, so there's really no, you know, very little indication that if you're Eastern Orthodox, I know how that person's going to vote. Or if you're Roman Catholic, I don't know how that person's going to vote. There's no indication of how they'll vote based on their religious affiliation.
Right, right. I understood, say, only because I'm focused on Russian Orthodoxy. I don't even relate to the other Orthodox churches. They're too Americanized and Westernized for me. But in terms of our faith, which is one and the same, I would say, you know, baptism, because of the love of the divinity in every human being, that we're created in God's image, the respect for human life, and that would come into it when we think about matters such as abortion and euthanasia, also all of the sexual perversity. I think you're going to see a commonality there. But in terms of the Democrat and Republican, I really cannot speak to that because, frankly, I used to be very deeply politically involved in my life, extremely so. And I have the conclusion that there is no political solution to a spiritual problem. And when I look at the United States, both Republicans, fundamentally, the vast majority are evil. They accept corruption in their life. The lie is a way of life for Americans. So why do they act surprised when the government lies? It truly is. I don't see, we would not have the evil government murdering tens of thousands worldwide, millions, when you go back over the decades, if the American people did not have this evil inside of them. So when I look at Christian belief in the United States, I believe that there are very few actual Christian. So whether they sure can rationalize it, be a Republican or a Democrat, there are a few things they agree on, and that's American hegemony. And thus, they don't have a respect for human life. Not truly. They care only about themselves, greed, materialism, that reflected in both Republicans and Democrats. I think, as many people have said, there are two parties, very little difference. They do their little bickerings and arguments in Congress and wink at each other. We know that which we agree upon. And the fact is that comes from the people. So I really do not care about the voting patterns any longer, because I don't see any hope for America coming from the voting booth.
Well, I guess it's the question I'm getting at is more like the fruit of said, you know, church or denomination. Now, I think it might be statistically impossible to stratify like Eastern Orthodox into, you know, the various streams. I think that would be statistically impossible to get, you know, what are the Russian Orthodox voting patterns? Like, yeah. But I just wanted to ask.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Eastern Orthodoxy has, you know, it faces a lot of the same issues that, you know, evangelicalism and
that's right.
You know, the Roman Catholics, you know, they subverted themselves. They got Pope Francis. But, you know, we didn't ask for, you know, leaders like, you know, Brent Leatherwood leading the charge on, you know, politics and you know, Christian interaction in the faith, or, you know, leaders like Mike Johnson in the halls of U.S. Congress. And we're recording this right after. The weekend where Mike Johnson just, you know, screwed the American people in broad daylight. And most people don't realize that all that money we're sending to Ukraine and Israel is inflationary spending. So
yes, it is.
It's not like France, you know, helping out America during a revolution in which France was also at war with the British Empire. That's not the same thing. That's not inflationary spending, because they're not borrowing. Or they're not printing money out of fiat to fund, thus creating inflation. So this hurts the American people directly.
Yes.
And it sends a message that they don't care about the American people. And I wrote over the weekend that I believe that Mike Johnson is essentially a traitor because he's, you know, he hates the United States, and most of Congress, I say, it would fall under, you know, the traitor category, because they are basically viewing the United States as a corpse to loot for foreign interest.
Yeah.
And I guess we're going to talk about the foreign interest right now. So I guess the first place to start would be the Ukraine war, which I follow pretty closely. You know, I'm very fascinated with military history. So I find the Ukraine conflict to be interesting, because it's an example of a modern military conflict of conventional warfare, but in which, you know, you have two superpowers against each other. You didn't really see that with the Iraq war, because, you know, Saddam Hussein's militarily incompetent, and that's kind of his history of losing like three wars and stuff like that. So you didn't really see that. Maybe if the Vietnamese had, like, you know, modern technology, that would have, the Vietnam War would have been a closer parallel. But in terms of this conflict, I find it very interesting. The tactics, the kamikaze drones are going to be, you know, very dominant. And my read on the situation right now is that, you know, after the Russians had a major victory earlier this year at Avdiivka, the Ukrainian front line has been collapsing all over the place. Like, you know, a year ago, the lines would have been pretty stagnant, not a whole lot of change. But now it's, you know, Russians gaining here, Russians gaining there, Russians gaining there. And the next major battle will be for the, you know, forgive my pronunciation, of Chaso Yar. So that's going to be like the next fortress city. And I don't think it's going to take, you know, it took the Russian forces and allies 9 years to take Avdiivka. That's how well fortified that place was. Anything behind that line is not going to be nearly as well fortified. So I don't, and on top of that, the Ukrainian military is running out of manpower. We can give them weapons and systems and all we can, but at the end of the day, they need people to use those systems, and you're st- they've already started to relax the language requirements for recruiting foreign soldiers, which just ultimately spells disaster that they're going to be relying on foreign mercenaries if the war persists much longer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many foreign mercenaries are going to sign up for that meat grinder. Mm-hmm. So am I missing anything on the read of the current situation in Ukraine?
I'll make a couple comments. There's a lot there I would comment. I'm going to go back to Johnson and the vote for the 60-some billion to the Ukraine, as well as the billions to the Zionist state. And I would like to make one comment on your comments on that. As you stated, but no regard for the man and woman working hard to provide for his family billions of dollars. And yes, as you know, inflationary to these evil military actions, funding them both with the dollars as the weaponry. And that in itself is evil, because the United States has no business whatsoever in our Constitution to be involved in any of this. This is not the founding principles of the United States whatsoever to be going and meddling in the affairs of countries worldwide. The United States has some, 800, 900 to 1,000 military bases worldwide. It has nothing to do with self-defense. This is just more of a big money maker for those that are invested in that and the military complex. It is to foster, and they're feeling desperate now, which is going to lead us to the battlefield and what you just said. They're feeling desperate now because their investment in the Ukraine, which started many years ago, it's just like with the Zionist state. Want to claim it started on October 7th? No, it started some 76 years ago. It's the same with the Ukraine. It started decades ago when the U.S., after the fall of the Soviet Union, came arming them, subverting, using it, CIA operations within Ukraine, and they don't want to lose this. They want to be able to have Ukraine. They're ready to go and warned by Russia that there is not going to be expansion of NATO. But again, lie after lie after lie to the Russians. So this started long before the SMO, the special military operation. Now, to the military side of this, I'm going to look at it two ways. First of all, I firmly believe in studying, and I love watching the maps daily and the advances and the Russian troops and what is happening. What you said is so. It is going to collapse. It will end, prevail. And I do believe the actual military operation, as Putin stated, February 22, are going to be met. And the fact is, most Americans, list mainstream media, which is just a mouth of the government in this country. Interesting, they don't have about journalism, media in the U.S. I frankly believe that they should if they're going to put it on others. But Russia could have ended. And the only reason they did in advance, when they had come to Kiev, didn't win anything. The Russians backed in for the signing of a peace agreement and to stop it right then. And then, of course, the United States and UK did not want that. And thus, they had already pulled back their troops. They had wanted to destroy Ukraine and take it over. It could have been done very quickly if they had the evil methods that the United States, that NATO uses worldwide. But Russia...
My read on the Battle of Kiev was that the Russians were logistically not super competent on that front. They pulled out during the timing that you said for some sort of peace talk. But ultimately, they weren't on trajectory to win that battle, is my read. Mm-hmm. But Ukraine wasn't, they failed to deliver any sort of decisive military counteroffensive to kind of envelop and trap those units because they're too busy. My read is they're too busy fighting in Mariupol which is lost territory that they're not going to be able to hold. They're too busy trying to, you know, hold that at all cost.
And well, stuff I would, like that. I would say that my understanding of it, those troops, as a sign of goodwill, because they had all but the signatures until, of course, notoriously Boris Johnson came in there and made sure that that was put to an end. But my point is this. I believe that the outcome of this, Russia will prevail. They will achieve, how it's just a matter of how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands the United States wants to have die for their bottom dollar, because that's all that it amount will prevail. And Russia doesn't use the tactics of carpet bombing in Ukraine. They do not wish to destroy the Ukraine. And they have always been ready to come to the peace talks. That is not the goal of the United States. When you take a look at NATO and even those non-NATO countries such as the Ukraine, they still want to use them and arm them. And this is endless. It is, for me, I will tell you this, quite frankly, from the very beginning, I knew and I believe and I knew that Russia will prevail in every one of its, in order to stop, and I will say this, the aggression that the Ukraine had been showing, not only against Russia in terms of arming with U.S. arms there, NATO arms there, but also what preceded this was 8 years of that the Ukraine did. This goes back to the Maidan coup. The United States, the CIA overthrew the legally, the duly elected president of the Ukraine. This is all a puppet government. And then another one, you know, comedian, whatever he is. They're all clowns in the collective West. Evil clowns, sadly. Which
they went from chocolate. They went from Willy Wonka to basically reality TV star. Basically, they went from like a Willy Wonka to a Ukrainian Donald Trump. And I don't mean that in terms of policy comparison, but in just background comparison.
Right, I understand. Yeah, but it started.
I just think that's funny.
I know, but it started many years ago prior to that. So I'm saying we had the people in Donbass who have been shelled for over men, women, children, many women and children being ruthlessly murdered and nonstop because they did not accept that government, the coup that happened. They were Russian. They speak Russian and they wanted to. They are Ukrainians and they are Russian and they were not permitted to live in peace. They did not accept this coup and this falsely installed government. And for that, the Ukrainians, backed by Americans routinely, just as they do now, commit terrorist attacks. There are torture camps. They would even raid the towns in the Donbass, take women and young girls. The evil that the Ukrainians were doing long before the SMO for 8 years, you know, when you take a look at in Donetsk, we're asking, hoping that the Russia Federation would come to their rescue one day. And I think that the only regret that Putin, to some that we didn't, you know, that the government there did not do it sooner in order to help those people. The threat is against an existential threat against Russia because of the arming, the U.S. arming of Ukraine right on the borders when they promised they would never do that. But also, I would say the torture, the murder of civilians that Ukraine did for 8 years straight until Putin stepped in with the SMO.
Yeah, I think most people don't realize that Ukraine has been at war for, you know, 10 years now. And that should definitely factor into people's, you know, evaluations of whether, hey, is it biblically justified? And I would say that, you know, in regards to the Donbass, they had a biblical justification for interposing against the Kiev regime. It was overthrown in a coup, so therefore they did not have to submit to that authority, and they used, you know, local government to interpose against the, or provincial government might be the best way to put it, to interpose. And I believe Donetsk is like, was at the time the third largest city in Ukraine. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. One of the largest. Talking about here is a racism, a xenophobia from Ukraine. And again, Ukraine is nothing in terms of its own country. It hasn't been for years now. It is another vassal of the United States to do their evil in that part of the world. But they were not going to stop. And so, yeah, it's 10 years now that civilians die, and they target civilian targets. This isn't warfare. They cannot, going back to what you and I were just talking about, Ray, succeed. And the only white reason that they are still even in existence is because of the restraint, because Russia does care about human life, unlike the way NATO wages wars. When you think about Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, Yugoslavia, what they did in Yugoslavia, is their policy. That is how they achieve their results. That's not Russia, what Russia wants to do with the Ukraine when these are Orthodox people.
So, quick question on Ukraine. When do you think the conflict will end? You think it's going to end? What do you believe is your timetable? And then second part, what do you think will be the terms of peace?
All right. Well, major questions there, Ray. I would suspect in terms of the ending, Russia is taking it slow. They are going to achieve every one of their objectives, and we have to have a change in that Ukrainian government. We cannot. And by the way, they do have much neo-Nazi behavior there. They certainly are fascist. We need that to change for Russia itself and its borders to be protected, its people. You see the terrorism happening in Russia. That's directly caused by the United States. So that possibility has to be put to an end. And whether there is a buffer zone in terms of the land that he retains. And I say Russia is ready to come to the peace table at any time. But of course, the Ukraine has made a law that they will not ever talk to Russia. That's why they have these silly little meetings that are supposed to be discussing peace terms without Russia. The insanity, it's just absolute spiritual insanity. I would say they're taking it slow, and we certainly are probably going to go through this year in 2020, and we're going to continue to gain land and make advances. It's all speculation how far that they will take that. Pleased to see that they are destroying more communications, the towers, and the infrastructure. If we can just stop the military might being brought in by the West through Poland, would be good. But I would say they are taking it slow. I think that is out of respect for human life. And number two, we see the great advantage that is being had. They are exhausting the weaponry of the West. They are weakening them. And as you very well stated, in terms of the money policies, economically, the United States is NATO. I mean, we're looking at what is going to happen with NATO and the European Union. They're exhausting. This country has nothing to do with the safety of any of their countries because Russia has never threatened anyone. So I think that they're going to be taking it slow, and I would suspect it's going to certainly go through this year into the next year, because I think they're gaining quite an advantage in the weakening of America in the world as a result. I think there's another advantage slow, because they certainly could get this over with, and advantages for the world to witness. Because most of the world, unlike those in the United States and other countries, most of the world knows the history. And they do know, and they have suffered at the colonialism, be it from France or UK or America, for decades, the people have suffered. And they see hope. They say that the SMO has actually brought hope to many countries in the world. So I think that we're getting an advantage because American hegemony is weakening. That's why I see the desperation. So I think they're going to continue to take it. I really do not have a guess as to when that will end. Frankly, I believe they could end it at any time they want it if they brought in the force that they could use. But I feel that they value human life more to that of advantages. You know, in the Bible, I believe it's in Genesis, might be Genesis 50. But anyway, I'm just paraphrasing. There's a means it for your evil. The enemy is trying to harm me. But God, a child of God, will use it for my good. And I will have to say that I believe that's here. And I see the sanctions failing. Those are laughable. The entire world sanctions of the European Union and the United States. Because what we are doing is making a the GDP inflationary rate, they are becoming self-sufficient now because they had to. And it is going to make for a stronger Russia. We see the development of BRICS, which I think is wonderful. What we are seeing, and I feel the SMO is part of that, it's longevity at this point. It is also succeeding in educating the world and the world a confidence to challenge U.S. hegemony. So I don't really know in terms of that timing. They could end it at any time, but I think they see much strategic value in the world. And I think the rest of the world sees that too. And also the crime of the United States are their funding of what is terrorism, their funding of these unjust wars. And no Christian should be happy about the U.S. involvement in Ukraine. Should have done nothing about it in regards to the SMO, but this is their little child, so to speak. The Taiwan, it is none of the United States' business. Same with The Zionist state, and I'm not going to call it Israel unless I put it in quote marks because it is not the Israel of the Bible. To me, any Christian who says they side with Israel is siding with Satan. Same when you go against Russia. So I think that as long as it lasts, it will benefit Russia.
All right. So it sounds like, from what I gather, you kind of have a timetable. You know, theoretically, on the current trajectory, they're taking it slow. But, you know, you mentioned in all through this year and through next year.
Right.
You didn't mention any year beyond 2020.
No, I would feel that feels
five. So
my sense that I do, I find it fascinating today, you know, and with the internet and those that are there and the subscribe to some of that and see the advances even day by day. It's very interesting, but it's tragic.
Yeah,
it's tragic. I mean, the thousands dying, the Ukrainians, now the foreign mercenaries, what do they have any bit? That's what they are, mercenaries. Give them a dollar, they're going to murder someone. They don't care about the right and wrong of it because no Christian who cares about the truth would be on Ukraine's side. But we should all look at the tragic loss of life, which is completely, what does all of the people in the United States say? We're going to fight to the last Ukrainian? Well, I don't see the Americans dying for it. No, I just see that the American people are suffering because of the money. And even here in our own country, Ray, what I find so pathetic is to see even those who argue, or many of those who argue against the funding of Ukraine. We have no business funding the Ukraine. But even so, they only look at it because of the economic reasons. Yes, the United States is a dead man walking. Economically, perhaps it will end that way. It will fade, busy trying to maintain itself to be going around the world murdering civilians, which is essentially what it does. It's a very evil, evil country. But yeah, I do. I would say 2 years, but I think it's good. And I do believe that God is going to work through Russia for the benefit and the hope of the rest of the world. And that's what I see going. And anyone who hasn't studied and taken a look at BRICS and the economic strength, we are moving a multipolar world instead of a unipolar world. American hegemony is going to end. The sooner, the better.
There's a lot of people in the Christian nationalist camp that definitely would agree with the end of American hegemony being a good thing. I just wish, you know, I wish America was the empire that we were accused of being, that we were imperialist. But we're not. I would actually say we're anti-imperialist because, you know, what I said, we're like people use us as a corpse to feed other foreign interests. So that's like the opposite of imperialism from a current perspective, that we, our people suffer so we can build a democracy over in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, the whole idea. It's weird to see a country like Russia actually fight a war for its national interest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And,
well, part the only of what reason military should be used is for the defense of the United States, at really since its inception, which is very sad. Principles are ignored and the Constitution is ignored. And it makes no difference who is in power, which president. We don't have anyone rejecting. And I would say it is an empire and it is imperialistic. You go speak to all of the countries that are connected to it. They're either, they vote when they're at the UN or else you lose this. It uses its might. It is the bully on the planet, and we would not have the death happening in the Ukraine. Tragically, we would not have the death happening if it weren't for. And you know, I think of the term the Iranians use, the Great Satan. Well, the Great Satan of the world really is the United States. People would be happening, and it's states they gave up their sovereignty.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I look at the British Empire, it's like you declared war on Germany over Danzig and you lost everything for that. Like, you know, so with that said, let me kind of opine on my own analysis, because I think the price of the brick has gone up in terms of what the, you know, terms of peace will be. You know, Russia's annexed four territories, and unlike Nikki Haley, I can name them, you know, Zaporizhia, Kherson, which is the one they have the least control of,
yeah.
Donetsk and Luhansk. My pronunciation's bad, but I see them probably annexing more territories as a result. Maybe they'll take it to the Dnieper River, or, you know, maybe they'll want to take Kiev as a prize because Kiev was the first capital of the Rus.
Yeah.
So I think whatever's left of Ukraine will definitely be forced west. I don't know whether Odessa is going to be, they're going to try and landlock Ukraine. I don't know why, you know, the people, the countries of NATO don't be like, hey, we want our territory back and our people back as well, like Hungary and Romania. You know,
I think
so. You know, I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, best case scenario is you partition Ukraine into Russia, Romania, Hungary and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to get the band back together.
My personal feeling, and I, you know, I mean, it's up to the Russian people and the Russian government what is in their best interest for their people. But I just have a feeling that we will have Odessa. We must and we need, and I think that would be a very good security for us and the ports. We can never trust the West again from the Russian perspective. Again, Ukraine may end up as a rump state. Poland cares so much about them. They can incorporate some of the polluted land from them using their depleted uranium. I don't think that Russia is going to want such land. But I think there's going to have to be an agreed upon and these other governments involved. And frankly, what you said, I think that a lot of those countries want to restore some of their lands. I think that will be how it ends. And then Russia will have the security that it should. And Russian civilians will no longer be terrorized by the Ukrainians.
So let's move on to the, you know, Israeli-Gaza war. Okay. Obviously, you call it the Zionist state. I mean, obviously, you know, my position is that, you know, the Crusades had it right, and it should be the Kingdom of Jerusalem in the Holy Land. That's my official position. And what happens here is, you know, Muslims and Jews fighting, which, you know, sometimes is a little bit more of a historical anomaly in terms of, you know, if you look at, you know, Spain, the history of Spain and other places. So with that said, you know, Christians in, you know, what is called Palestine, that area, Middle Eastern Christians in general, they don't like Israel. And in fact, you know, the Syrian Christians also supported Assad. So I was wondering, as, you know, Eastern Orthodox, could you speak to why their reasons are for not liking Israel?
Well, actually, I'm going to turn the table there. I would have to say, since the fake Israel, as it is called, was formed by the UN, as an Orthodox Christian, I would have to say there are the ones, as Muslims, that are, to use your word, disliked by the Zionists. You take a look, even when Orthodox Christians are on pilgrimage there, there are Jews there that are allowed to nuns as making the pilgrimage. Any of us as Christians who go to visit, you can be mistreated. And it is, again, as I said, understood. Good, of course, meant there does not allow that. Wink, wink, it happens. It is permitted. So the persecution, though, of course, fundamentally against the Palestinians, and it has been since the beginning of this, a two-state, really, that was another one of those. Yes, we all fully understand we will never allow that to happen. But the peoples actually, more or less, sometimes less, did live in coexistence until the fake nation was made. And then, of course, they went ahead and continued into the lands and the occupations. I don't think about what the end could be, but no, I don't agree with how you said that. The Zionists there, who are opposed to Christians as well as Muslims, you know, Palestinians, I don't think they have any respect for human life. And frankly, I feel that the Zionist state is an abomination, and it should be an abomination.
So what, you know, I phrase things in a certain way, I guess, that my audience would most be familiar with understanding. So that area was about, you know, in 1936, I believe they did like an almanac sort of survey of the area, and it was about 16% Christian. Mm-hmm. Now it's like less than 2%. It is the least Christian of its neighboring regions. Lebanon. So I'm kind of amazed that Christians would support something like that. Mm-hmm. But Lebanon used to be like 50% Christian, and now it's significantly lower than that. Mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson, but it's been brought up recently how, you know, Christians in Iraq were genocided. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of speak, you know, more broadly to the decline of Christianity in the Middle East? And, you know, how does that relate to either Israeli governmental policy or American policy, foreign policy in the region?
I would say I can't speak directly to that, haven't intended. Study. I've definitely seen who live in several of those countries, and those who have remained and why they remain, small as percentage as it is. But I would say that, like with anyone that might could leave, unless, as people I've spoken with, choose to stay because they love their land, they love actually being there because of their Christian roots. But many, if you can leave and you know the volatility, you know, I've even spoken to one woman right next in the bridge right next to her home has been destroyed, you know, I think once or twice, and yet she remains. There are people who love their homes and stays, but I think that many people who are Christian, they have the means to leave. Not with the historic people of the land. And I actually have done interesting. It's very detailed, and I'm still learning even about the DNA of the Jews that lived there, because these are Eastern Jews that came here. These are not really the people of that, as it may. Nobody really asked the Palestinians before they decided on a two-state solution, which of course they decided to implement. What we have is what we have right now, and that's what matters. And what do we have right now? We have a genocide going on. We have somewhat 35,000 and larger once all of the bodies are one day pulled out from all of the rubble. We have a genocide funded by the United States. None of it would be happening if not for the United States. And this, as a speaker and a writer, as a Christian, is to try and waken other Christians to realize that this isn't what Jesus called you to do, to support a state like this. I know are very journalism, but in the United States, there are people filled with glee. And I know you know this, Ray, happening. They don't think about the toll on human life and suffering. Since they made the fake state call Israel, the execution of young Palestinians, hearings. There's no, the United States is always talking about democracy, human rights. That's all gone. There's nothing that the state of Israel, the Zionist state, does that is at all God's will. Just more evil. And I would say Netanyahu is a satanically controlled human being. And at this point, I don't see viable the two-state solution. Which wrong as it beginning, but it never was implemented. In fact, it has been disrespected every step of the way. And I don't see that it just seems like it would be for the state to continue and for the Palestinians merely to suffer. I don't know what there is, but I can tell you, for any American, whether it's a civilian or anyone in the government, to be funded and continuing to the evil Zionist state. It's just absolutely the antithesis of being a Christian.
I've definitely made some saucy comments like that, like a lot of what you just said, as the 23andMe reference that you just made to ancestry. And I would also point out, if we actually, one of the questions that I asked about Israel's modern Judaism in general is why is their symbol the Star of David? That doesn't look right. That doesn't look biblical. And then you look into the history and it's not. You have a spidey sense discernment is like, no, this symbol, the hexagon is represents a cube of Saturn.
Yeah.
The 6 points, stuff like that. Six planet from the sun even. But there's something, and there so happens to be a hexagonal hurricane on Saturn, which I don't know, why, God designed it like that, but it's a weird coincidence. But anyway, a lot of Christians just don't ask questions in the United States, and it shows, especially with regards to Israel. Now, one of the things that, obviously there's a dispensational reason is why America funds Israel. I actually view the American funding of Israel as tributary, especially among Republicans. The Republicans believe that, Israel, the Genesis, was it 12 or 10, promise of blessing those who bless you and cursing those who curse you. They believe that applies to modern day Israel. So they're trying to curry favor with the modern God of Israel. But I don't think the modern God of Israel is the God of the Bible. And I think we are, in irony, being blessed by their God, which in turn would, not be God, so therefore would fall under the dominion of Satan. Right. And if you look at what's happening in America, we are being, blessed by Satan from a certain point of view. His hand is definitely on our government, his policies, his perversions. And I'm not even sure if they're all his perversions, because, we're inventing ways to do evil these days. And you hate to see that, but I would just ask any dispensationalist, if that's really Israel, where are the blessings from giving them tribute for all these years? And I don't think they'll have an answer to those questions, because, you know, basically, if you're just asking questions, I think you're going to walk away from dispensationalism. And I think the internet is going to be the, and social media is going to be the death spell for that generations to come. So one of the things, one of the reasons why Americans also tout Israel is that they're a democracy in the Middle East. I've been studying a lot of the Peloponnesian Wars recently. And I just instinctually side with Sparta because Athenian politics is just so cringeworthy. It was cringeworthy at the time, you know, that, you know, a general won a battle, but something about collecting or failing to retrieve bodies means we're going to try him. And stuff like that, even though he just won a battle against Sparta. So, you know, we're going to punish him now. And it's like democracy was very cringeworthy in ancient times and very tyrannical as well. But nonetheless, you know, we value Israel because they're a democracy. And we presuppose that they're also free and, you know, to be for religious practice, which isn't really true. Even Voice of the Martyr recognizes that Israel is not friendly to evangelism. In fact, it's pretty much illegal to evangelize the Jews in modern Israel. So with that said, one of the critiques about Russia, and this is a question I meant to ask earlier but forgot, so Brent Leatherwood, Dan Darling, they love to tout that Russia is persecuting evangelicals in Ukraine. I wonder if you had any sort of response to that. Is that just military propaganda? Is there some legitimacy to that? Is there a reason that, you know, they maybe deserve to be persecuted? What exactly is the rationale for what these claims about Russia and the Russian, you know, held territories in the Ukrainian front are?
First of all, I would phrase it, I don't, when you said perhaps they deserve to be persecuted.
If they're like spies or anything like that, you know, then they're not really civilians. It's what I mean by that.
Right. Okay. Because persecution does imply an unjust mistreatment, and no one should be mistreated. I will say this, not familiar with what you, I can relate it back to Russia because some of the same accusations against the Russian Federation. They're not of the mainstream religions, but some of the newest quote Christian in quote religion in the United States. Russians do look askance at them. I've also studied enough to know there's definitely a very serious question that some of, and again, I'm speaking within Russia, not in the newly liberated areas, that consider themselves persecuted in terms to have their private meetings in their homes religiously and practice their religion, but they are not of any of the accepted religions, you know, be it Orthodox or Jewish or Hindus or Muslim, because those have been utilized. And the United States has a very long history, the CIA, of infiltrating and using religious semblance in order to form subversive groups, which is the fifth column within a nation. It's been battling that, you know, ever since the Soviet Union, even before, but certainly after that was a great advance in that. So perhaps that is what you might have been studying yourself, that they are accusing there. And that may very well be so. In terms of, there is freedom of, I can only speak to Russia, and in the, I am not familiar with what you are sharing, except I have heard the same and then researched into it. And I did find, you know, indications that some of these quote Christian groups were being utilized for subversive anti-government, and no south that, just like the United States off south and its interest within its own country. That may be what you're alluding to. If not, I am not familiar.
I mean, it's interesting because the whole thing about, you know, if a foreign government attacks someone, you know, there's two sides to every story. Just to use the Tucker Carlson Putin interview as an example, he brought up the journalist that was captured and Putin said he was caught red-handed, mm-hmm. you know, breaking the law with espionage.
Right.
Yes, we're going to imprison him. It was basically Putin's response. Now, I don't know anything about that situation, or, you know, the Brittany Griner thing where she brought a laughable amount of drugs into a foreign country and thought that that was okay.
Well, to keep it in perspective, Ray, when you enter Russia, when you travel to Russia, when you land at the airport, very large signs that indicate they don't even will hold someone like that anyway, punish if you had them and you discard them. They actually have the trash, no questions asked. But if any of this is in your luggage, right now is your time to dispose of it before you venture.
Okay, so they have that at the airport.
They have that
at the airport. So once you land in Russia, you can discard your contraband.
Yes, yes. And nothing is done. And what was the other you said? I wanted to make the point. Americans, don't you find it interesting that any time an American is accused of a crime, when it in another country, then you are under their criminal jurisdiction, but that every single American is innocent. It's been that way for decades, no matter what. If they are caught in Russia, he's innocent. I don't believe that for 1 minute. And I find it ludicrous that anyone
I view foreign policy as sports teams. That's my team. That's my player. I'm going to defend them, you know, if they're wrong, unless it's shown.
That's
a natural disposition to have, I would say.
Not because truth is my highest priority. And if somebody is an American in any other country or some foreign national is in our country, of which there are many, border that we have, if they commit a crime, then they are under the jurisdiction. They may be able to work with the governments, but they need to be held accountable. I don't know why Americans go around the world thinking they are special people and immune from prosecution just because an American, the height of arrogance.
That's certainly an interesting perspective to have, I guess. I wish America, you know, cared more about its people abroad, because we didn't care about the journalist that the Ukrainian regime killed, because he reported facts that were contrary to the Ukrainian narrative, specifically when they're trying to attribute atrocities to Russia. And I don't know what the story was, whether these were like graves that were from the Soviet genocides that were being accredited to the Russian invasion now.
Right.
So I don't quite know the details of that, but he reported information that was contrary to the Ukrainian government narrative, and then they persecuted him for that. It goes all directions. America persecutes journalists. Every country has an issue with this, but I guess, you know, we're only supposed to call it out when it's, you know, the other team's quarterback,
interject. We as Christians should not accept that. We shouldn't say America right or wrong. I'm going to go on waving the American flag. You can love your family. You can love the people. The fact of the matter, your benefit, your low price gallon of gas, your ability to have these natural resources should not come at the else. Christian love is to love all, and there are no exceptions. And so, no, I do not look at it that way at all. If an American breaks the law,
Not saying that I do look at it like that.
Okay.
Saying, you know, that's a general mentality that people have.
A general mentality. And for me, that's part of why I've created my, there is in the United States, free media. It's the whole thing is laughable because the government narrative is what millions of Americans hear every day and think they are well informed. Up to many others. There are so many any. We can listen to the news, even just the news, if that's all your typical American, to take some time from around the world, even European, broaden that. Because in the U.S., you get the narrative, and every narrative, just like you very well stated, everyone agrees with, I stand with Israel. And as I said earlier, any Christian that says that, you're standing with Satan, as you said yourself, going back to the United States. It's not the Israel, end quote, is influenced in the U.S. The U.S. is the one, because none of this death, None of the persecutions of Christians and Muslims alike would be happening if not for the United States. And so when the United States is wrong, whether it's an individual American or whether it is in their policies and meddling in international affairs that has nothing to do with the protection of their country, when wrong, I will call it, every Christian should stand against that. You should not support your country when it is wrong, nor an American. Yes, do the best you can for them, negotiate for their release, but to always come out with the, oh, well, they're innocent. Yeah, well, every one of them has been innocent no matter what they've done. That is the history of the United States. It's of American hegemony, as if they are a special people. And Jesus Christ does not recognize anyone as better than another, but the United States does. And as you said, that is why they support the Zionist state. They think it is going to benefit them ultimately. As you said, they're suffering. Ultimately, the simple mind, they want to see the destruction, you know, building the temple. They have all of, I believe that it is by dispensationalist Christians in the United States who are benefiting greatly with such a story. You put the fear in them, you give, they support you. Just like the way the U.S. government work. And it is utterly disgusting. And we have much warning about the those persons who are so smug in their Christianity, their entire life, they support it. To hate your brother, Jesus' brother is a murderer, where every single Amu would support any candidate who supports, quote, is a murderer. Anyone who would support the Ukraine is hating his brother, because the truth is not with the Ukraine. The truth is not with the Zionist state. So you are all murderers, and the blood is on your hands for doing that. We as individuals can differ, and our path is between us and God. Support these unjust wars. Do just like they did in Iraq, I think before God, you are complicit and you will be held responsible. This nation will be, and as individuals. And my goal is to reach individuals who do what Christ taught us, so that they don't get carried the American flag when the United States is wrong.
Okay, so you've talked about, you know, the problem, going piggybacking off of what you just said. What do you think the solution is? You know, what exactly is your end goal? You know, someone comes to you, you know, where are you leading them, so to speak? To Russian Orthodoxy, or do you think it's just to acknowledge, well, you know, a higher level of, you know, okay, truth and justice?
Okay.
That doesn't show partiality to nations. You know, what do you think the solution is?
The solution is always spiritual, as I said earlier, and I will answer that in twofold. Not everyone is going to become Orthodox or Russian Orthodox, Orthodox Christianity, but first and foremost, I would invite American Christians to explore Orthodoxy. I do have resources on my website to learn about it. For me, it has been a beautiful, it's wonderful. I do feel I'm in the true church. So of course, I would extend that invitation, but to all those who feel they are Christians, love Jesus Christ, and are trying to do the will of their Heavenly Father, and are quite happy with their denominator in. But if you are truly follow the words of Jesus Christ and you follow what the apostles taught us, and it is they who I am trying to reach. So they may remain in their Christian group, and that is well, but you have to live it, because in order to consider ourselves a religion, it is a way of life. And I would call upon all Christians to live that and exclude lying is at the heart of all the evil you and I are talking about, Ray. This is a spiritual war between good and evil. And all of the conflicts we see geopolitically are battles in that and evil. But you and I are also every single day in a battle in that war. And that is with our mates, our children, our place, our nation. Because every single day that we wake up, we are either choosing to side with God and or else we are side with Satan. There is no in between. There is no gray area. So my purpose is to reach those who are Christians, because I do have to have that fundamental understanding of Christ and acceptance. And then you have to live it. And to live it means you also apply that to all of these issues with the people in your life and also politically. You cannot separate it. One of the worst things that was done here in the United States is touting separation of church and state. Yes, we're not talking about having it without our faith informing the way that we run this country and the people that we put into power and allow to go around the world murdering civilians, people. And I do feel the nation is going to be cursed because of it. But I would speak to every individual out there, every Christian, whatever denomination. I'm not talking about that. But if you love Jesus Christ and you love the truth, the lies, the propaganda, just call it propaganda. You can do your own research because it's so available to you. Do not simply side with what the U.S. government does, because to do so is to align yourself with a satanic agenda, which at its worst may end in massive death in the world, because the warmongers actually benefit and arrogantly think that to be immune to it, perhaps with all their bunkers and everything. If it came to that, they will be. The worst of them will survive in the United States if it came to that. But other nations, even in NATO, you know, we look at Hungary, Turkey, at least we have some leaders that have some sense of what we're facing, unlike the United States, which just continues to provoke. So I speak to the individual, not to the country. I'm not thinking about America. I'm thinking about the individual Christians, and you have a choice every day to choose. I'm here to share with you that what you hear on the news about these geopolitical conflicts is not the truth. The United States is an empire of lies, and I invite everyone to my website. You can learn, do a lot of your own research, but don't align with evil. Don't, because it's your well-being as an individual that is at stake. You love, then you must believe in love for all. And that's not, we are not a Christian nation. You might pride yourself on it, but we are not.
Certainly not in our current state, but that is the goal that we have here, is to make us a Christian nation again. And one of the things that, you know, brought us to this point was that we value pluralism, not just, you know, it sounds like Putin just acknowledges that, you know, Russia has a lot of different, you know, it's vast in both people and geography, whereas America kind of made pluralism a value. And that just, I don't think, has worked out for us very well. And, you know, our politics now appeals to the lowest common denominator of voter and stuff like that. How about you let the audience know where they can find you?
Yeah. Well, to what you said, thank you. I think it's called a cocktocracy. It's competent or the worst human beings in a society rule that. And that's what he is. Ray, I've appreciated our dialogue today. I invite your viewers to AmericanOrthodoxChristian.com. You can sign up there to receive notice of new content. There are many essays there and much information to explore orthodoxy. I would say that any true Christian, regardless of the denomination, the church, any true Christian who loves Christ will find much material at my website, which will be edifying, AmericanOrthodoxChristian.com. Thank you, Ray, for the conversation.
I'll let you know in the audience that you can support Evangelical Dark Web at our Patreon-like system at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. This is a Christian news gathering and commentary ministry. And, you know, we kind of break news and we provide a different narrative, you know, a more truthful narrative than what you'd hear from people like Richard Land, who runs the Christian Post and who works with Daniel Darling and Brent Leatherwood, who really promote the lies that we were talking about in this discourse. So you want to support us over at evangelicaldarkweb.org and check out our free newsletter. But the least you can do is like this video, subscribe to the channel or podcast if you are new. Anyway, stay based. Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.